Hey everyone, welcome to today's overview. We're diving into the wild weather spectacle from May 29, 2012 in Oklahoma, where two supercells collided and unleashed tornado magic.
Yeah, this isn't just a storm chase story, it's like real meteorological drama. We'll walk you through what happened when a right-moving supercell met its rival from the south, a left mover, and why that boundary collision mattered so much.
And the document we're exploring for this session is Right-Moving Supercell Tornado Genesis During Interaction with a Left-Moving Supercell's Rear Flank Outflow by Roger Edwards and Richard Thompson from the Storm Prediction Center. These folks know their stuff.
Exactly. We'll start with what supercells are, then trace how the right mover remained mostly non-tornadic, follow the left mover's gust front, and finish with what happens when they slam together. If you geek out on storm dynamics, you're in the right place.
Their main goal is to show, with radar and field data, how boundary interactions, especially between supercells, can amp up tornado risk really fast. There's epic hail, gustnadoes, and even a brief tornado as a result.
The scope ranges from storm origin through boundary dynamics, operational forecast challenges, and how that real-time awareness helped anticipate the tornado. So, let's get rolling.
So, to kick things off, what even is a supercell? Think of it as a thunderstorm with a rotating updraft, technically called a mesocyclone, making it the heavyweight champ among severe convective storms.
Right. And the document points out that almost all giant hail reports, like those baseball to grapefruit-sized chunks, and most tornadoes, especially the strong ones, come from these supercells.
And they're not all the same. You've got right movers and left movers. The right-moving supercells tend to rotate cyclonically. That's the same direction as most tornadoes here. The left movers, oddly enough, spin the other way, anticyclonic.
Yeah, that's what the meteorologists call mirror image storms. Like if one is spinning right, the other's spinning left. Supercells are unique because their motion and rotation both play big roles in how dangerous they get.
And on that Oklahoma day, both types formed east of a dry line and south of a warm front. That setup is key for storm development: deep moisture, unstable air, and strong winds aloft.
Classic Great Plains recipe. You get west-northwesterly winds, blowing steep lapse rates from the Rockies, layering over moist air from Texas and Oklahoma. That's just perfect for supercell formation.
Let's follow the right mover. It fired up over northwestern Oklahoma, tracking southeast for over 3 hours. Field scientists tagged along, chasing it as it churned out hail up to 5 inches across. Massive. But get this, it stayed visually high-based and mostly non-tornadic for a long stretch.
So high-based means the storm's updraft base was way above the ground, right? Which usually means less chance for tornadoes, because the critical rotation doesn't get down low enough.
Spot on. And even though it spun up a gustnado, a dusty, brief vortex, it never quite fit the tornado category. Gustnadoes pop up and outflow unconnected from updrafts, so meteorologists are picky about labeling them.
I find gustnadoes fascinating. They look intense, but it's all about how they connect to the storm's main convective column. If it doesn't link up, it's just a gustnado, not a tornado.
True, and as the supercell pushed toward Kingfisher and Canadian counties, radar showed broad cyclonic rotation. Reports started rolling in for severe hail, including that record 5-inch whopper at Piedmont.
5 inches. That's like almost the size of a small melon. Imagine the damage.
Totally, and the storm was moving southeast at double its usual pace, all while staying non-tornadic. Folks in the field watched, wondering if something would change.
Meanwhile, the left-moving supercell was born in northwestern Comanche County, well south of the right mover. The LM storm initiated from an outflow boundary, intersecting horizontal convective rolls, basically those wavy, streaky areas you see on radar.
Yeah, these rolls help boost updrafts by focusing areas of lifting. The LM storm got stronger with each roll it crossed, kind of like stepping stones across a river.
The LM storm matured as it angled northeast. Radar showed its rear flank gust front growing more defined, almost like a shield trailing behind it. And surface data from Mesonet stations revealed abrupt drops in temperature and dew point as the boundary rolled through.
Mesonet sites at Fete Cobb, Minco, Hinton, and El Reno tracked wind direction, speed, and pressure changes. When you see pressure rises and falls, that's the storm scale cold pool at work. Mesonet data in the document really let us follow the boundary step by step.
The LM storm moved northeast at 30 knots, about 87% the speed of the right mover, but still fast. Its hail peaked at almost 3 inches, not as big as the right mover, but impressive.
And as the LM gust front came closer, folks started connecting the dots. What could happen when it met the RM supercell's mesocyclone?
That's a neat point. The field team repositioned themselves, anticipating that collision could heighten tornado risk. It's like real-time forecasting on the fly.
Which brings us to gust fronts and outflow boundaries. A gust front forms when cooler air from storm downdrafts pushes ahead of the storm, creating a boundary. Outflow boundaries can really shape how storms interact, and sometimes trigger new storms.
It's kind of like the invisible fence moving across the landscape. You feel it as the wind shifts or the air cools suddenly. Meteorologists track these boundaries for hints at where storm activity might spark.
Radar shows these boundaries as lines or arcs. And when a gust front merges with a supercell's mesocyclone, the conditions can shift fast, making tornado genesis suddenly more likely.
Right, and field signs matter too. You might notice dust plumes, shifts in wind direction, surface signals telling you a boundary's on the move. That's where MesoNet data shines.
Rhetorical question time for listeners. Have you ever felt that sudden breeze and wondered if it's a precursor to something bigger? Well, in this case, it was.
So now, everyone's waiting for the big moment, that boundary collision. Researchers and forecasters anticipated the left-moving gust front would reach the right mover's mesocyclone near Piedmont. As soon as the boundary passed, radar and visual cues showed the cloud base lowering, rotation tightening, and, boom, tornado genesis.
Within 5 minutes after the boundary's arrival, they got a tornado, rated EF1, with a condensation funnel and rain-wrapped appearance. It only lasted a few minutes, but managed to damage a trailer's roof.
That fast, huh? It's like, you blink, and the tornado forms. It speaks to how boundaries can rapidly tip the scales.
Totally. And both the field observers and the Storm Prediction Center issued mesoscale discussions, warning locals that tornado risk was surged near the RM track. Those short-term warnings matter.
Operational forecasting isn't just about big-scale predictions. It's about catching these subtle, short-lived boundary changes that spike tornado risk right where it counts.
And the beauty is, their anticipation lined up with radar and surface data. Seeing theory come alive out in the field is rare and critical for forecasters.
Let's talk meteorological mechanisms for a sec. Tornado genesis here was sparked by the rapid ingestion of cyclonically curved outflow from the LM supercell into the RM's mesocyclone. That boundary was the catalyst, like it set the stage for everything else.
That matches models from Lemon and Doeswell, those classic supercell schematics. But what's wild is how real-world data lets us see those processes, not just on paper.
And recent studies referenced in the document support this. Storm mergers, boundary interactions, and variability in mesocyclone response. Sometimes boundary mergers strengthen supercells, sometimes kill them off. Here, the timing was perfect for tornado genesis, then mutual demise.
Fisher and Dahl, for instance, documented types of supercell interactions. Our event fit their southern cell pumping outflow into northern tornadic cell archetype, but it also had elements from other merger types, all happening fast.
Does it surprise you how much theory and practice matched up in this case? I feel like the forecast and observations lined up almost uncannily.
Yeah, for sure. It's not every day you witness such a perfect alignment between idealized models and real storm evolution. Let's step into radar and in-situ observations. The field crew took photos, wall clouds, dust plumes, and even the tornado funnel. DC3 project teams launched balloon instruments in the storm's environment, gathering detailed microphysics.
They combined surface MesoNet data with radar from Twin Lakes, Vance Air Force Base, Frederick, so there's a multi-layered look. Each data slice revealed how the boundary and storm changed minute by minute.
Not to mention the mobile MesoNet, tracking perturbations in pressure, temperature, and wind as boundaries passed. That mobile data's tricky, lots of variables, but adds depth.
I love that radar didn't just show storm movement. It also caught outflow boundaries and hook echoes. Pairing photography with radar made sure everyone could see both the storm's beauty and its danger. For operational forecasting, short-fused warnings are vital. when the Storm Prediction Center issued mesoscale discussions, they called attention to the boundary-supercell interaction, which is not always obvious.
The FACETS paradigm mentioned in the document is about continuous threat guidance, bridging the 6-hour watch with the 15-minute warning. Accurate diagnosis is crucial when boundaries could spike risk for a few minutes.
So, it's about situational awareness, looking for those hidden boundary interactions that might not show up on big-picture models, but matter for real-time safety.
And honestly, boundary-driven tornado risk is just one of many forecasting challenges. Storm mergers are messy, unpredictable, and rarely behave exactly as models claim.
After the tornado, the LM and RM supercells pivoted around each other, merging into a disorganized cluster. Both storms kind of fizzled, leaving behind a chain of new right-moving supercells, but they didn't turn tornadic.
That's called a Fujiwara pivot, named for Sakuhei Fujiwara, who studied how rotating storms interact, like a meteorological dance. But this wasn't a long-lasting tornado cluster. The storms weakened and the main show was over.
Still, the LM boundary helped spawn a new RM storm nearby, so there was more action. But the tornado was a one-hit wonder. Brief, intense, and then gone.
The next day, DC-3 flights tracked chemical signatures in the storm outflow over the Appalachians. That's how far these storms' impact stretched.
So why does this case matter? It's a rare, well-documented instance of a left-moving supercell influencing tornado production in a right mover. The document ties field observations to theoretical models, bridging that gap for operational meteorologists.
And it isn't just theory. The event supported newer models for storm mergers and boundary-driven tornado genesis. Plus, it showed that sometimes it takes a perfect storm of timing and environment to spark a tornado.
You got to acknowledge how each storm contributed something unique. RM with giant hail and broad rotation, LM with its sharp gust front. Their collision set off a chain reaction.
It's neat to see how field data, radar, and surface observations illustrate storm evolution, almost like flipping through a weather scrapbook.
To wrap up, boundaries aren't just weird lines on a map. They're active players, tipping tornado potential in seconds. When a boundary meets a mesocyclone, pay attention.
Absolutely. Meteorological awareness means understanding boundaries, mergers, and operational forecasting. You might not always get a tornado, but when you do, it's fast and fierce.
And here's a question for listeners. Next time you notice a sudden breeze after a storm, what do you think might be happening in the sky above?
Could be a boundary on the move. Combined with radar alerts and surface data, you might be witnessing a tornado risk spike in real time. That fleeting moment can mean everything for warnings. So, pulling it all together, the May 29th Oklahoma case gives us a playbook in boundary-driven tornado potential. Supercells don't act alone. Their boundaries shape every outcome.
Right. We saw how the RM storm stayed non-tornadic until the LM gust front arrived and flipped the switch. Real-time forecasting and situational awareness were key.
And we highlighted how operational tools like radar, mesonet, and field observations contribute to forecasting. When theory meets practice, you get better warning systems. Hey there, everyone. Today we're diving into a seriously cool weather story, a real meteorological adventure.
Absolutely. We're talking about an afternoon in Oklahoma back in May 2012, when two supercells crossed paths. Things got wild. If you've ever wondered what happens when storms collide, buckle up.
Yeah, and the details come from a document by Roger Edwards and Richard Thompson at the Storm Prediction Center. They documented not just two different supercells, but how their interaction triggered a tornado. It's honestly the kind of stuff weather nerds dream about seeing live.
Right, so this isn't just about thunderstorms. It's about the rare dance between a right-moving supercell and a left-moving supercell, where outflow boundaries and gust fronts play out like chess moves.
The main thesis is simple. By understanding how these boundaries interact, forecasters can spot spikes in tornado potential, sometimes in real time.
Important for anyone passionate about severe weather. Since it shows how theory and field observations mesh, sometimes rescuing lives with better warnings.
So, let's set the stage. The meteorological background is like classic late spring in the Great Plains. Lots of warm, moist air pooled up thanks to a dry line and a warm front.
Yep, Oklahoma and Kansas were pretty much primed for action with those atmospheric ingredients. The document notes that the sounding from Norman showed big buoyancy, meaning the air was ready to rise and make storms.
Exactly. And with weak convective inhibition and a long, straight hodograph, which, for anyone not deep into meteorology, is a plot showing wind speed and direction at various altitudes, you had the perfect recipe for supercell formation.
A lot of weather enthusiasts ask why supercells are special. It's that rotating updraft, a mesocyclone, which helps them become organized monsters. Supercells are actually responsible for most giant hail, damaging winds, and tornadoes reported. This case checked all the boxes.
Yeah, and on the afternoon of May 29th, two supercells formed about 100 miles apart. One was a right mover, the other a left mover, each with its own personality.
Let's talk about the right-moving supercell first. This storm was visually high-based, meaning its base was far above the ground, a sign it's not likely to produce tornadoes right away.
Exactly. It stayed non-tornadic for hours, but it wasn't quiet. It produced a gustnado, which is kind of like a mini tornado kicked up by outflow and hail as big as 5 inches. That's a golf ball times three, right?
Right, like giant hail just raining down. Meanwhile, scientists from the DC-3 field program were chasing it, launching balloons, and gathering data on precipitation particles and microphysics.
The document even notes how the storm went through a long pretornadic phase. It kept moving southeast, building up cyclonic rotation, but not quite crossing into tornado territory.
And then on the radar, there was this broad rotational velocity in the mid-levels, like 18 meters per second, but still not tight enough for a tornado.
Yeah, it's almost like the storm was waiting for something, like it needed an extra kick.
That kick came from the left mover. Unlike the right mover, this storm started off a bit more discrete, forming from an outflow boundary and horizontal convective rolls. If you don't know, those rolls are like invisible escalators in the atmosphere, helping storms grow.
And the left-moving supercell was anticyclonic, rotating the opposite way. It matured quickly, produced hail a bit smaller, but still solid, around 2.75 inches.
It even had its own well-defined gust front you could spot on radar, and if you were out in the field, the Oklahoma Mesonet stations tracked changes in temperature, dew point, wind, and pressure every time that boundary swept through.
And, I mean, the way they tell it, the left mover was basically racing northeast, closing ground on the right mover that was moving southeast. There was an anticipation these storms would collide in the Oklahoma City metro area.
The authors themselves repositioned to the extrapolated collision point because they called it tornado potential would spike there.
Before we get deeper, I gotta ask, how do outflow boundaries and gust fronts actually influence tornado potential?
Well, boundaries are like lines drawn in the atmosphere, where cold air from one storm pushes into the warm air feeding another. When a mesocyclone ingests a gust front, it adds cyclonic vorticity, twisting up the storm more tightly.
Makes sense. It's almost like boosting the spin on a top. If the gust front is strong enough, that extra spin can tip the storm into tornadogenesis.
Exactly! The document pointed out how the left mover's rear flank gust front curved cyclonically as it reached the right mover's mesocyclone.
And the authors, Roger Edwards and Richard Thompson, actually saw the boundary past their location. Within minutes, the cloud base lowered, rotation strengthened, and boom, a tornado formed, supported by radar and photographs.
Just to clarify for folks, the tornado was rated EF1, not huge, but it did damage a trailer roof and lasted just a few minutes.
And it was rain-wrapped, so visually it was tricky to spot unless you were right there. This kind of tornado is common in these setups.
The document notes that tornadogenesis happened right after the boundary passed, before the storms actually merged completely.
It's interesting because simulations, like those by Hastings and Richardson, show both the strength and separation distance of the gust front matter. If you have a strong boundary but it's too close, the storms destroy each other. If it's just right, you get the tornado, but then the storms merge and lose their structure.
In this case, both storms ultimately merged, did a little Fujiwara-type pivot, where their centers swirl around each other, and ended up as a weakening multicellular cluster.
And just after new convection popped up, another right-moving supercell formed along the leftover boundary, but this one stayed non-tornadic.
So, bringing it back, the operational implications for forecasters are huge. The authors anticipated the boundary supercell interaction, and SPC issued a mesoscale discussion about the heightened tornado threat.
Yeah, and as the document notes, Catching these brief spikes in tornado risk depends on situational awareness and diagnosing storm boundary setups in real time.
The OA Forecasting a Continuum of Environmental Threats, or FACETS, is designed to help with exactly that, offering more continuous hazard guidance instead of big gaps between watches and warnings.
So, like, if you spot a gust front approaching a supercell, you can say, hey, tornado potential's about to jump, not just wait for radar-confirmed rotation.
It's clear the case study blends observations, theory, and operational context, and it shows predicting tornadoes is as much art as science.
Absolutely. I mean, field observers made an educated guess, and boom, they were right on target.
There's something poetic about storms acting like chess pieces, strategic moves across the plains, boundaries interacting, and sometimes, surprise tornadoes.
You know, for beginners, the technical parts can be kind of intimidating, like what's a mesocyclone? But honestly, it's just the spinning core of a supercell, and boundaries strengthen that spin.
Same with gust fronts and outflow boundaries. They're just cold air moving out from a storm, pushing into warmer, moister air ahead.
If you ever see fast-changing clouds and sudden temperature drops, you're probably watching a boundary move through.
Or sometimes you feel the wind shift and the air gets chilly. That's your real-world sign that a gust front has arrived.
What I think is fascinating is how these interactions play out so quickly. Like, the document describes things happening within minutes: boundary passes, rotation spikes, and then tornado genesis.
Right. And the mobile MesaNet data captured those shifts. The pressure jumps, temperature drops, wind shifts, all basically right as the boundary crossed.
It's easy to miss how important that is. MesaNet stations give forecasters real-time, on-the-ground info, which sometimes shows warning signs before radar picks up on them.
For sure. And it means sometimes the best tornado prediction comes from combining radar, field data, and a little bit of intuition, based on past cases and theoretical models.
And it was cool that the authors referenced all kinds of prior studies, showing that while this interaction isn't unheard of, it's still rare to catch it live and document every detail.
That's the value in case studies. They don't just catalog cool events. They give forecasters new tricks and insights to help save lives.
Yeah, and speaking of, this case demonstrated just how variable storm mergers are. Sometimes they strengthen a mesocyclone, other times they kill it off. Kind of unpredictable, right?
Totally. The document compared this case to others. Some where mergers led to intensification, some where it was just stochastic, meaning random.
And for weather enthusiasts, it's a reminder that not every boundary interaction spells instant tornado. Sometimes it's just a rain shaft or giant hail.
Exactly. You gotta have the right ingredients, timing, and sometimes a bit of luck.
Before we wrap up, one question I get a lot is, how do forecasters spot these interactions in advance? Well, it's mainly through a combination of radar imagery, MesaNet data, and situational awareness.
Yep. Watching for outflow boundaries and radar reflectivity, tracking storm motion vectors, and paying attention to pressure and wind trends, it's a blend of technology and experience.
And sometimes, the best way to learn is just watch the skies, see what unfolds, and read case studies like this one for inspiration.
Weather is as much a story as it is science. Each storm is its own character, acting out on a stage, right?
Totally. And with that, we're ready to recap what we've covered. So, to sum up, today we traced how a non-tornadic right-moving supercell met up with an anticyclonic left-moving supercell's gust front, and that boundary interaction triggered a tornado almost immediately.
We explored meteorology behind it, discussed mesocyclones, gust fronts, boundary dynamics, and how real-time observations helped forecasters anticipate the risk.
The big takeaway is that understanding storm, boundary interactions, and staying alert for these short-lived increases in tornado risk can save lives.
The document blends field observations, scientific models, and operational impact, showing it's crucial not to miss these fast-moving threats.
Thanks for tuning in, and keep watching the skies. Severe weather isn't just dramatic, it's a puzzle waiting to be solved.